This is a Collider.com audio interview.
I know we're here for Green Zone and all that, but I have to say, as a fellow New Englander, I just read online you're going to be playing a Yankees fan.
Oh, not, man, shit, I've been asked that question so many times. I haven't seen that script yet, but I know Ben's been, Ben was really high on that story. It's kind of like a well-known story about these two pitchers for the Yankees who swapped wives.
See, that's okay. I mean, like, that's a little bit better.
I'm talking about wife swapping. It just always makes me think of raising his own.
But, I mean, do you feel like, I mean, that, again, New Englander, I just sort of, Yankees fan, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like when Billy Crystal was doing the movie 61, and I went and I talked to him, and I said, God, I think you're going to make a really good movie, but I don't think I can put that hat on. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, we'll see what, if Ben's really hot to do it, and we get a great script, then, you know.
Okay.
I'll just tell people it was Photoshopped.
Okay. How relevant is this story to 2010?
Probably depends on your perspective. I think it's extremely relevant. I mean, I think that the last thing that, you know, I'm saying to the Kinnear character about, you know, the reasons we go to war matter, that, you know, that I think is highly relevant.
Sorry, I thought you hit it before, I promise.
I didn't say anything yet. You missed, I just did a big tell-all moment, you missed it, but it's fine.
You talk about the Yankees thing, right?
It's over. It's over. I think it's extremely, extremely relevant. And not a partisan thing either. I think, you know, that's a that's a sentiment I think that most people share. No matter what you believe, that really matters. And I think the central question of the movie, it was something that I think we all asked. So our idea was to have a character who was a good soldier who went there thinking he was going to find something and then got there and didn't find it and then asked the question why, which I think is kind of what happened for all of us. We were told something was going to happen and it didn't, and then we went, well, how did we get here? Oh, right, the weapons. Well, what happened with that? Where were they? So I think those are kind of fundamental kind of questions.
Well, okay, so Jason Isaacs didn't want to get into the percentages of truth to the story. Perhaps you could. What percentage would you assign as far as the sequence of events that are most important to the movie and their veracity?
Like which would you?
Well,
there were no weapons in Iraq. So that's true. A lot of people went there thinking there were. That's true too.
There are fictional characters in the administration.
Nobody's really explained what the fuck happened. That's true too.
Well, okay, so that's what I mean.
But those are the central questions, I think. And that's, you know, that's the big, I mean, like what we have in the movie is, yeah, we have a guy playing kind of a neocon type who actually invented a source, right? So that's not based on anything. That's obviously something that, you know, for the movie, for the kind of the architecture of a thriller to work, it needs to boil down to a couple characters, you know, who are standing in for kind of, you know, other characters. So that, you know, that stuff is, you know, obviously the movie, you know, it's just, but the central question of, like, WMD was, you know, I mean, that's obviously true. I mean, Monty, the guy actually who my character is based on, a guy. We had these things called mobile exploitation teams. So in the movie, I'm Met Team Delta. Well, Monty was actually led Met Team Alpha, and he told me he helped put the teams together. And he said, you know, he was racing the other team leaders because for who was going to be first on CNN holding up, you know, the weapons. And in our movie, you know, that first really exciting kind of sequence at Diwania, I come out of that and say, well, you know, where did this intel come from? Like, what, you know, is this United Nations? Like, what, you know, this is the fourth time, you know, and I make some comment about, you know, so it's clear that this has happened to us before. Monty, in fact, told me that the first site that he went to he went ripping in there with everything and his intel packet, and it was listed as a dual-use facility. And I think it was a porcelain factory, but it was listed as a dual-use facility, which means, well, it's a porcelain factory, but that's really a cover because what they're really making is some bad weapons there. And he went in there, and he looked around, and he said, this is all bullshit. He said the first site he went into, he knew there was something horribly wrong. Because he said there's no way a rational person could come in here and say they're making something here other than porcelain. Because that's all this place can do. And so that kind of thing. Here's a guy who's kind of on the pointy end of the spear there, you know, hunting for the weapons. And that experience, that was the one that they were having, where, you know, they'd go to the JMOC and say, like, well, where did this intel generate? What is this, the same source we've been using? Because we haven't found shit, and these things keep telling us there's going to be something in this factory, and there's nothing in these places. So what's going on?
Do you think that there's any risk of somebody less informed, say, watching this movie and drawing conclusions based on the stuff that was for the sake of storytelling added or whatever? Like, is there? I've been doing a lot of the research beforehand. You see a lot of stuff posted online, a lot of people prejudging, forming opinions of the movie without having seen it. And so you can see a sizable element of the country viewing the movie as loaded, I guess. And so they're looking for anti-war messages, they're looking for things to pick at, and maybe not understanding that this is supposed to be something fun and a thriller based on real things,
right.
And how much of this is being made to seem manipulative or anything like that. Because I thought it was a fantastic movie, and because I have the understanding that it's entertainment.
Right. I mean, yeah, it's entertainment, but kind of based in the real world. And the whole kind of, what we were trying to do was just see, like, you know, you have, like, the Bourne world, which is obviously kind of a heightened, you know, thing, and Bourne's kind of a superhero character. And so we wanted to see if we could kind of take that extra step into the real world and bring the kind of the Bourne aesthetic, but set it against. And when we read Rajiv's book, which is great, Imperial Life in the Emerald City, that provided the perfect backdrop, that kind of surreal green zone, where all of this kind of conspiracy and, you know, paranoia and intrigue and all that stuff, kind of, because that's where everybody went to kind of build, you know, the shining city on the hill. But it was a kind of a surreal place where they had Pizza Hut and you know, they had all those things, and they were disconnected from what was really going on. So it kind of was a kind of a fertile, like, if you start with the question of the weapons, which was the reason ostensibly that we went there, so you start with a guy who's a genuinely good soldier who's like believes the weapons are there, and you know, you see him not find them, and then the next logical question he asks is, okay, but then what's going on? Why aren't they here? And that search kind of brings him into, you know, this world of the green zone, where he's got very simple motives. He's there to win a war, to save lives, and he's got very noble motives, but he suddenly finds himself in a very complicated world with these very powerful competing agendas, and he's in the middle of it. So that is like kind of classic thriller, you know, architecture, and that was what we set out to do, to see if we could make a big action thriller that kind of spoke to the world that we live in.
What drives you to do these kind of movies? Because if you look at your resume, you've done like a lot of like Syriana, Informant. They all deal with like either historical or real world issues, partially fictionalized, but like definitely like things like these things that you're interested to you and you feel like you want to tell the stories.
I don't really have an overarching strategy. It's kind of a one-off thing. Like, mm-hmm. I'll read a script and
there's nothing a through line from your work, like especially recent work, like that it's like
maybe. But I think also like recently, Hollywood has kind of maybe become more interested in current events. It seems, you know, it seems like there are more those Syriana type movies and you know, those types of things that seem like a reaction to, you know, the world that we find ourselves living in, you know, I think it's probably tough to have you know, do as many movies as I do and not have some of them feel it be about current events, you know.
There's a scene in the film where you don't get your ass kicked in, but you get defeated in hand-to-hand combat. Was that
pretty
important?
Soundly.
How important was that to put in to show that this isn't you playing Jason Bourne?
Yeah, well, I never thought of doing it for that. I just thought it just kind of, Miller should feel like an everyman, and you know, Jason's character is supposed to be a special forces. Jason's character is like the Jason Bourne guy, you know. So it was never going to be a fair fight. Also, just I try to, if it's a non-Bourne movie, I try to never win a fight. I think that's always more interesting. I remember on The Departed, like there, everyone's peacock feathers were out, and it's like, you know, and I just remember going to Marty, like I saw this whole swath of like kind of virgin territory where no one would tread, and I just was like, I'm gonna take that. Like, Marty, I wanna lose every fight I'm in, and I don't want my dick to work. That's the character I wanna play. I'm gonna have that beachhead all to myself, you know? So, but yeah, I mean, it just, you wanna feel too, like, it's also, I get beat up, but I am able to keep the book from him. So it's like, it takes a lot of punishment in order to do the what he thinks is the right thing, so. Something noble about the ass whipping, I guess.
Your co-stars talked a lot about how the story sort of changed organically as you went through filming, and how even their character story changed. Was there a different ending for your character at any point, or you know, did it veer to the right at all?
Well, we always asked what felt like the right ending, and we always felt was it feels right that he's ends up with his guys, you know, and they're mm-hmm. you know. And now, and I mean, what's kind of unspoken is like what he's going to do is to go fight a war now, you know, because the there's no more mobile exploitation team, you know. He'll get remanded back to the artillery division, and now he's gonna, like all those guys did, he's in a war now, and you know, so it's even though he kind of got the truth out by the end of the movie, it's not necessarily the happiest ending, you know. He's
What was it like working with the real soldiers as opposed to people acting as soldiers?
It was great. Yeah. It was great. I mean, really, the amount of work it would have taken to train actors to do what these guys just did naturally.
Sure.
You know, everything like, for me, it's like, if you ever go on a movie set, you know, we have what's always called a technical advisor. And you can always tell that person because there are actors crowded around them, you know, henpecking them with questions. And usually it's, you know, it's the expert, you know, if you're making a movie about the state police, it's a guy who's a state policeman and he, you know, and et cetera. So, but with this, it was like having 30 of those guys. And, you know, scenes like hitting Syed's house, like where we go running in and break up that meeting, you know, we just, you know, Monty even said to me that day, he said, you're about to see these guys, you know, what they do. This is what they're really good at. And they would just get someone to stand in for me. Monty actually just stood in for me, and they just hit the house the way they would hit it. And you know, and then they did it slowly, and we just went, okay, first guy right, second guy left, third guy long. And Paul said, okay, well, I want you looking for the back door, so you're going to go long, so you'll be the third guy through. And you know, and we just kicked the door in, and literally did, you know, the camera. I right when I run by Clements, he just peeled in behind me, and we went in and. And I just love that stuff because it's I call it NAR, no acting required. You're just like so kind of taken over by the situation and surrounded by these guys who are just really know what they're doing. So it makes it feel really authentic.
What about Monty specifically? I mean, you referenced him a couple of times. So what kind of an invaluable, you know, resource was he for just all, you know, basically any piece of information that you need about how things worked, or you know,
he was
the right gun or the
great.
Right gun or
yeah, something. No, all of that stuff. I mean, from the specific, the details of you know, how he tied his shoes. I mean, literally, how to specific operations and specific things that they did, and how certain things worked, and what would you say here in this situation if you were in this, you know, because obviously it's based on Monty, but this isn't what happened to Monty. I mean, right. We go off into a whole different. You know, it's an action thriller, so. But we would set up these situations, and his answers always shocked me a little bit. It was always really, really interesting. We had a scene that didn't make it into the final film, but where I took the body back to the house that we went through of the guy and took it back to his wife in exchange. And now, the way, like, the Hollywood people would conceive of that is like a big weepy, you know, scene of like, aren't I horrible, your husband died and I couldn't stop it, right? And I asked Monty, you know, Monty was like, I said, what would you say to her? And he said, you know, basically you're doing a favor for her by bringing the body back so she can bury it within 24 hours and she has to make a decision right now whether or not she's going to give you the information you need and you can get her to Jordan. And he's, I mean, the point is you're in a war, you know, it's not about, you're in the middle of a war and this guy was an enemy and yes, he died and that's bad and it's too bad, but you need to make a decision now. This place is not going to be good for you. Things are not going to go well for you here. You're the wife of a high-ranking Ba'athist who's now dead, and you don't have anybody to protect you, you know. So it's a very kind of a tactical, you know, an approach of just like what advantage can I gain from the situation that I'm in order to help us win this thing? It's really how they think, you know.
Where do you go from here? I mean, obviously you've done like 3 movies with Paul. I think he says he wants to do another movie with you eventually. I mean, as far as what's next for you right after this? I mean, are you looking for very different roles than this and Invictus?
If I can finish growing this out, I'm going into porn.
Okay.
but 80s porn.
If you Google yourself today, that is like the story that's up online is...
Yeah. Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Trying to grow it out for True Grit.
Oh, True Grit. No,
yeah,
oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, the Informant one I was a glue on because it had to come off and on because I only had it for about 3/4 of the movie.
Oh, cool. So this is your first time working at the Coens, right?
Yeah. I'm really excited. It's a great script. They just adapted it from the book, and the book is just amazing, and I'd never read it, but it's terrific, worth the read.
When does production start?
March 15th.
Are you a big fan of the Westerns and like any of the
Yeah, I love Westerns. I really love the Coen brothers, so I'm looking forward to that definitely.
And what about the Oscars? You're returning to the Oscars, you know, again for this time. It's one of those things. How do you feel about doing the Oscars where you have to? I mean, Christoph Waltz is basically everywhere. Everyone's talking about him. Yeah. I mean, just go in saying, okay, it's nice to be nominated. I'm gonna go and do the whole thing. And, or would you like just...
No, you just go there and have a good time. I mean, like, there's no pressure. You're not going to have to make a speech.
You don't think. So there's always been these surprises, but you never... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think anyone's surprising, you know. In fact, I emailed Stanley Tucci. we'll have a contest to see who can be more magnanimous when Christoph Waltz wins.
Right. When they have the camera on you. Yeah.
I did that with Billy Bob Thornton when he was nominated for A Simple Plan. We were working together, and God, he had the whole crew going because he had them, you know, while they were setting up a shot, he was sitting in his chair, and he had them, his assistant, naming the other people. And, the Oscar goes to, you know, whoever it is, whoever was in the category with him. And he was practicing his gracious...
Nice.
So he's like, I really need to rehearse this. So, I got to go out there, and I just don't want to get caught off guard if old so and so wins, and I got to make sure I'm looking gracious. You know?
Right. So no storming out. No storming out.
No storming out. I'm waiting for the actor to have the courage to to just go fuck. I might, if I have the balls to do it, you'll see it on the March 7th. I'm just going to be sitting there. I'll just like this. Fuck.
No way. I'm going to ask the question. I've asked you this a few times in the past about Bourne. When we spoke to Paul today, and he's like, I'm out. You know, and it's done. So the question then comes, are you willing to make a Bourne movie without Paul?
No.
So does that mean that there's no more Bourne?
Well, I think that they have a good way to do a prequel with someone else and basically make it about the Bourne identity, the actual identity. Like what any studio is interested in is making it like an evergreen that can just go on and on and on. And it never will with our character because he's going to resolve himself and he's resolved his issues now. He's got his memory back 3 times now. You know, I don't think anybody wants to see me say I don't remember again. You know, so. But I think what we could do is like, you know, you can do some movies with another actor, anyone. You know, whether it's Ryan Gosling or Russell Crowe or Denzel Washington, and he's Jason Bourne. And then at the end of his one movie or 2 movies or 3 movies, you see them getting ready to pass the identity on to me. So it just becomes like a, you know, like a 007. It's like becomes the name that they give this certain person who's uniquely positioned in, you know, within, right? And so then if Paul and I come back and do a 4th one in 10 years, right, we'll pass it on to someone else. and then the thing can kind of go on. But I think the only way to make it go away from us is to say no.
So what would be the title then? I mean, is it what, like, you know, with Bond, it's like James Bond 007. How would it be with a title that they're thinking about going with?
I have no idea.
The Bourne Infancy.
Yeah, it's like a Look Who's Talking, but...
Okay, well, I'm going to ask you another New England question. There's rumors you're going to play Robert Kennedy.
Yeah, well, Gary Ross has the Evan Thomas wrote a new biography of him, and Gary's got the rights to it. So yeah, I mean, we're hoping to, but there's no script yet, so it's a little ways off. But if a script's supposed to come in next month, so hopefully it'll be great, and I'll have a job for the fall.
Are you amazed at how much online stuff gets reported before there's a script?
Yeah, it's incredible. In fact, Gary emailed me this morning and just said, because I got the question last night at the premiere, and Gary said, yeah, I guess one of the producers mentioned it, you know, kind of offhand, and the story just got picked up, you know, because I was surprised that, because it's something I've mentioned to, like, my wife, you know, like, oh, yeah, that might happen someday, you know, and, like, so, but suddenly it's like, you guys all know. It's like, how do you guys know that? I don't even know. What else do you know about me? Like, what else am I going to do? What am I going to have for dinner tonight?
Any chance you might work with Ben again? He's kind of becoming a really established director. And
yeah, and this says the last movie's great, The Town. I've seen the rough cut. It's fantastic,
okay.
Yeah.
So we just talked at all about, like, writing, maybe writing something with you to star and him to direct and just try to do something.
Well, that's the idea, the first look deal that we set up at Warner's. Right. Because, you know, I want to direct too, and so there are a bunch of different ways that we could end up working together. And hopefully, you know, it's weird that 12 years have gone by since we've worked together. It just kind of happened, you know. We were just kind of reacting to the work that was out there and starting families and all that stuff. So, but we definitely want to try and find stuff. It's tough, though. I mean, we wrote Good Will Hunting because we were unemployed and had all this time. And so... you know, we definitely don't have that kind of time anymore. So I think that's been the biggest obstacle to writing. It's just been all the acting work we've been getting, and now directing work for him.
Just going back to the Green Zone for a moment, you know, there was so much intense action in it, obviously. And, I mean, you know, there was, I mean, you had looting and riots going on, all this kind of stuff. I mean, was there any particular sequence with all the action and stunts that you had to do that really stood out as either a major challenge or just was, you know, particularly stood out as being a lot of fun or just really intense or, you know, anything really stick out?
There were a lot of really intense because what Paul will do is he'll you know, your standard kind of camera magazine load is 11 minutes, you know, 1,000 feet. And he'll have two cameras so that after, you know, 10 and a half minutes, a second one starts shooting. So when the first camera dumps, they can start reloading and the scene can keep going on. Mm-hmm. So we'd have these basically improvisations that would go on for half hour, you know, 45 minutes. And so that was really exhilarating. And you would never know where the camera was shooting because he was just kind of capturing, you know, like the first scene going in there, I just sat with Monty and said, okay, what are the things that kind of procedurally you do in a situation like this? Okay, there's a sniper back here in the tower. Now, here's what you have to do. All those orders I'm giving are just what those guys said. That is, you know, you would send this team this way. You guys would go this way. You follow the 203 down there. You go, you know, all that shit that you just go like, and you really, and you feel like that kind of heightened sense of, you know, and all that adrenaline while it's happening. Like hitting the house and like, all those, the actors are so good in that scene, Saeed, and then Khaled, who plays Freddy, who's translating, and the thing that's going on between them, and it's like, I'm trying to manage this whole situation, and all the soldiers were doing exactly what they were supposed to be doing, but we could hear the kids screaming upstairs, and I had the real comms link in my ear, and Paul had another one of the soldiers screaming, like, in my ear, like, I can't control the situation up here, and, you know, so there's so much kind of pressure, you know, and it really, you know, you can really believe that you're in a kind of an intense situation like that, and it also keeps you from, as an actor, kind of fucking it up by thinking about it too much, where you go, well, this is the moment I'm going to give him a steely gaze, you know. You know, you don't have any time to know, you don't really know what's going to happen. I mean, there was a take where Saeed was so, Paul had directed him to be so non-compliant, I was trying to talk to him, and he was like screaming at me in Arabic, you know, and I was trying to talk to him and he wasn't listening to me. And I just said, someone, I know I said to the, to I said, Potts, shut this fucking guy up. And I made the mistake of saying it to an actual Marine who literally muzzled him and dropped him by hitting him in the back of the knees so fast. I mean, it was so fucking fast. And suddenly this guy was on the ground and his eyes were just wide open and he was looking up at me. And like, and we just kept going. And it's like, okay, this isn't going to match what we've, what, you know, the other two takes we did. But maybe this is the fucking take. Maybe, look at the look in this guy's eyes. It's like, I've got him now. Where, you know, and you know, now he's fucking listening to me. And it's like that. That really kind of, so you never kind of knew where things were gonna, where things were gonna go. And that's really exciting. And that's where like the real, the non actors really help, because they just know their shit. And it just. It just makes us so much more believable, you know, because a bunch of actors in a room, I mean, God, we would have had to rehearse that thing for forever.
You and Paul have a phenomenal working relationship. How much, when you guys talk about other things, how much do you want to continue in the vein that you've been going in, or possibly just go and branch into a whole new direction with his style?
Well, you know, I think... Well, we've been talking about doing something, you know, maybe a movie, you know, about the economic meltdown. We're trying to figure out what the way in is, and but yeah, I mean, I love making these movies with him, and they give us, and we're making, you know, with, for pretty good budget, so hope, you know, so we can really tell it at kind of a, on a bigger scale. I mean, this is a big movie. You know, you got helicopters blowing up and stuff. I mean, it's like a big deal. So hopefully that we'll be able to keep telling, you know, big stories. But I'll kind of go anywhere he wants to go. I mean, I just think he's a great director. And I learn a ton every time I work with him about directing and about acting. I'll follow him pretty much anywhere.
You have another great relationship with Soderbergh. And you've talked about doing the Liberace project. There's something about Contagion.
Yeah, Contagion. Scott Burns, who wrote The Informant, handed in this great script, and Stephen, and it's timely, and so it's more of an ensemble piece. But I'm gonna play a small part in that, and then we're gonna do Liberace sometime next year.
What does this mean for your schedule in 2010? Have you already booked now what 2-3 films?
Well, none of them are actually lined up like we're starting here and we've got a green light. You know, they're all things that I'm really excited about that, you know, that'll be kind of movable pieces depending on Steven's schedule, or, you know, I mean, if this RFK thing goes, you know, then that might change some, you know what I mean? That there's a play I really want to do, you know, so but they're all just kind of really exciting things that are kind of out there in the middle distance, really.
You go ahead.
A few minutes ago, you were alluding to how much has changed for you in the past 12 years, and some men in my life have recently told me that you're their man crush, which I was shocked by.
Really?
You've also been the sexiest man alive. So
yeah, well, who knows what they were fucking smoking that year. That, I take no responsibility for that one.
So how do you handle like that kind of, you know, attention 12 years after starting?
From dudes.
From literally the entire universe.
It's a little uncomfortable. I don't know. I mean, I mean, nobody's really ever come up to me and told me I was their man crush. So hey, you're my man crush. I mean, that part's weird. I mean, I honestly just kind of feel grateful that I keep getting to make movies. I love doing it, and I really love all the different kinds of movies that I can make, you know, you know, whether it's a Bourne movie or a big action movie like this, or, you know, The Informant or Invictus, you know, like, ultimately, and The Informant and Invictus didn't do very well at the box office, like, but I really love those movies, so I'm, you know, in terms of, like, kind of the macro picture, I don't really know what, I think it's kind of harder to get a sense of where you are when it's you. You know what I mean? It's easier to kind of see where other people are. So that's a really bad answer. I don't know what I'm saying.
So who's impressed you as far as either another actor, who's been around for 40 years, 50 years, or someone who's like really like, okay, that's where I need to be like in 20 years or something?
Well, Clint. I mean, okay, you know, to work with him, and you know, he started directing around my age, and to see a guy who's that invigorated by what he does, who's been doing it for that long, is awesome, and it really is something that I hope I can have, in, you know, in my life. I mean, that type of it's such a full life, you know, to be totally engaged and inspired, you know, not be jaded and cynical, and you know, but still love telling stories, and still, you know, it's a really a you know, and like the pipe dream of a life, really. It's, you know.
Speaking of Clint, you hereafter.
Yeah.
How was that experience?
Great. I mean, it was just another blissful. It was really fast, because it's the movie's three different storylines, and so my storyline, they shot it. He needed 19 days, so we shot 6 day weeks, so it was 3 weeks and a day of shooting. But he's just ridiculously fast. I mean, we shot 9 pages one day. Yeah, he's amazing.
In the past year, you've gotten to work with. You have. On the doc, you have Coen Brothers, and you've done Clint Eastwood, you have Soderbergh, you have Greengrass. Is there any director that you'd really be keen on working with?
Well, I'm about to do it with the Coen Brothers. I'm dying to work with those guys. I just think they're incredible, and I can't wait. And there are a bunch of, you know, great directors out there. I mean, there's a ton of people I haven't worked with. But if I could just work with the people that I have worked with, I'd be great. Yeah.
You've worked with...
What's that?
Will you direct anything like that?
If I can figure out a project, yes, I'm dying to do it. I'm really excited about it. But I keep getting these jobs with these directors, and I go, I don't feel like I'm putting off my directing career by going to work with the Coen Brothers. On the contrary, I feel like I'm going to learn so much watching them that it's all, you know, I guess I'll put off directing for another year and watch these guys do it.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.